C1G.
Number 10B.
What does it mean to say that we can only fathom infinity through the Christ mind? It means that the perfection of love can only be realized through the sixth day of creation, that is the perfect man. And what was the piece of the sixth day of creation was really that man is what? God's consciousness of himself. God being conscious of his own mind, of his own spirit, of his own soul, of his own principle, of his own life, of his own truth, of his own love. That only can fathom infinity. Therefore, we can only fathom infinity by going out from infinity, from the very consciousness of infinity. So like can fathom like. Unlike cannot fathom like. Therefore, the mortals cannot fathom immortality. Human capacity cannot fathom really the infinite. It's only when we go out from the synonymous term itself and contemplate being from the point of view of mind and mind's creation, from the point of view of spirit and spirit's unfoldment, from the point of view of soul and soul's unchangeable identity, from the point of view of principle governing everything, from the point of view of life, of the infinite abundance and multiplication and spontaneity of life, only when we contemplate it with the consciousness of God in truth, that then we somehow, our consciousness is roaming in the realm of truth and of infinity. When she has depicted that, she goes to the last verse of the seventh day, namely, to love as love. And on the seventh day, God ended his work, which he had made, and he rested, that's now new, on the seventh day from all his work, which he had made. Her first marginal heading here is resting in holy work. Resting in holy work. Somehow a paradox. Either we work and don't rest, or we rest and don't work. But resting and working seems to be paradox in the human. They are not paradoxes in the divine. In the divine, things really work when our consciousness is at rest. Only when something is at rest within us and something can be reflected within us. It's like a lake that is at rest, no waves on it, everything is even, then everything reflects itself in the lake. The moment there is some disturbance on that surface of the lake, we can't see any reflection in it. It doesn't work anymore. So with consciousness also, we have to see that we are inwardly at rest, and then it works. How are we at rest? We are only at rest if through the 7 days of creation we have cleared up that there is nothing to be restful about, unrestful about it. That every day clears away a false concept and establishes a true concept, the true concept of the seventh synonymous term. And when we have established that, we feel inwardly at peace, we feel inwardly that rest, and then things work. Then things work. So it is not by might, but by the grace of God that things happen. So Mrs. Eddy shows that God rests in action. And she begins with that, and we see that she ends her paragraphs on that point with the same tone, namely that God rests in what? In the divine infinite calculus. And the calculus that is infinite is constantly calculating. Again, that wonderful paradox that spiritually is not a paradox but complementary levels at work. Imparting, she says, has not impoverished the divine mind. No exhaustion follows the action of this mind. You can judge yourself and measure up yourself. If you get tired in the study of Christian Science and study Christian Science, you get tired, you know that you're not quite on the right wavelength. Because no exhaustion follows the action of this mind. And the moment we get pressed and stressed in our study, we have to sit back and say, now, look here, that's not the way. That's not the way of grace. You have to get inwardly first at peace. And what does it mean? To get that state of consciousness where you see that we can't change a thing in the universe. If God doesn't change something, we can't change it. We certainly can't. We are not bigger than God. And so we do not even have to try to play God. Let God's perfection act according to the divine infinite calculus. And naturally we let it happen the moment we are aware or conscious of that perfection of being, which includes within itself that Christ consciousness, which is able to get hold of that perfection. Then the Christ begins to work as divine infinite calculus. So the highest and sweetest rest is in holy work. Again, the paradox. The highest rest is working rightly. And working rightly, as I said, is not struggling with all our might. And so she depicts what it means to be at rest and why we can be at rest. Because the last paragraph that has that marginal heading, love and man coexistent, can you hear the high tone of love as love, love and man coexistence? That within that coexistence, the activity of the divine idea is constantly at work. She says, unfathomable mind is expressed. So we have the unfathomable mind. It cannot be fathomed, but it can be calculated. Because the unfathomable mind naturally has no limits. Therefore, we cannot embrace infinitude, or we would have to be bigger than infinitude, but we do not need to do that if we use the scientific means. Then the infinitude can constantly be calculated in the measure as it presents itself to us. So unfathomable mind is expressed. Can you see again? The paradox, either it's unfathomable or it is expressed and it is fathomable. Again, that thing, that paradox. The depth, breadth, height, might, majesty and glory fill all space. We really have the infinitude of perfection here. And again, she says, this cannot be grasped by mortals. Human language, for instance, can only repeat an infinitesimal part of what exists. So it's very difficult to limit ourselves to human language. Therefore, it's much better to sit back and listen to God and hear God speak, not in human language, but in the language of spirit, which is much broader. Mortals cannot comprehend the absolute ideal man. They cannot comprehend man's spiritual principle, love. Again, can you see? Why should we approach infinitude through man, through human capacities, through human language? Let's get rid of that. And therefore, she gives the answer that these days of creation will appear as mortality disappears. If we let go of mortality, we give room to immortality. If we get rid of all the limited concepts of the human calculation, the human desires, the human motives, the human goals, all that, we really make room for the infinite idea to be at work. So these days will appear when mortality disappears, and they will reveal eternity, newness of life. So here we come now to eternity, so that the creative steps that have a time sense within themselves suddenly touch eternality. And we have seen that the day that the ladder laid down from God, that we go up that ladder from one rung to the next rung, to the sixth rung, that at that point we begin to touch somehow the fact that on the seventh rung there is no more a rung, that the seventh step is actually no more a creative step, but is a step of being aware of what is, in which all sense of error, forever disappear. It's a complete wiping out of any suggestion of error. And thought accepts the divine infinite calculus. So that's the climax of the 7 days. That now, within the unfathomable mind, the divine infinite calculus calculates infinitely, 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 and in this way can really calculate and fathom infinity. But through the way of science and not through the way of a consciousness that can embrace everything. Or consciousness would have to be bigger than infinitude. And in this way, she ends the tone of love as love, where infinite love operates as holiness, as the divine infinite calculus of ideas. That is the seventh day. And in this way I have tried to explain really that great fundamental proposition of being and becoming, those two opposite concepts, but they are only as long opposite as we are considering them on the same level. But the moment we can see that Mrs. Eddy and the Bible introduces a structural sense with various levels of consciousness, then these two apparently opposing concepts are actually working together and helping us to reach the state of being instead of becoming. Yes, that's that. Well, that doesn't leave us much more time to go to a bigger or a new subject. Tomorrow will be the great day. I will go over those 7 days from various angles. Not the way I've been doing right now, but to show that more categories are involved really in those 7 days of creation. That those 7 days of creation really include all the categories of being, and it's just a matter that we can see them, how they unfold. So now we have another about a quarter of an hour left, I think. How much?
12.
All right. So I think we just can sit back and say, now, what have we seen up to this point? What is the great story that is behind that Bible and behind Genesis? Well, how could we reason that out for ourselves? If we just are free from definite words and so on, we say, now, what does that great chapter on Genesis teach us? It teaches us and shows right from the beginning that the standpoint from which we should go out is that God appeared no more as our God, as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but as the God that says, I am that I am. I am that I am. And so Mrs. Eddy begins to interpret Genesis from that standpoint. And she starts out with Genesis 1:1 and says, and God created heaven and earth at the beginning. And that beginning, she says, is not the beginning. It is actually principle, the divine infinite principle. And so there is no beginning. That beginning only means the one and the only. There is only one and only. So she starts out from the highest concept of science itself and translates that one and only, because it's too big a concept for the human mind to understand and to fathom. She translates it right down to divine science and says, and that one and only is seen as the verity and unity of God and man. So that we get the feeling that that infinite one is not just somewhere a God up there, but that it is that one which is the unity of God and man as coexistent. Then she translates it further and says, it's not just a coexistence, it's a constant creation going on. So she says, that creative principle, life, truth, and love, is constantly reflected in the universe of being. So the creative principle, life, truth, and love, is reflected in its creation. What creation? Is that creation just a static presentation of what is? And Christian Science comes in and says, no. That creation is a process, a creative process. So she says, therefore creation consists of what? It says, this creation consists of the process where we have ideas, mind, ideas that constantly unfold through spirit and therefore always gather identity, soul. And so this process of ideas unfolding to the point of specific identities and unchangeable identities are the constituents of creation. They constitute creation principle. What kind of a creation do they constitute? It constitutes the eternal creation, life, that is expressed and reflected in a true form, truth, and is always encircled and encompassed by love. Therefore, at the point of fulfillment. Yes, that's wonderful, but what about that darkness up on the face of the deep? What about error? What about evil? What about matter? So Mrs. Eddy takes up that Genesis 1:2, verse 2, and explains how we have to deal with the darkness upon the face of the deep. How? And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the deep. That's how we tackle the darkness of the deep. By the Spirit of God that moves. And so she brings in the whole attitude or level of divine science and explains how that Spirit of God on divine science moves. It first shows that principle and idea represent harmony, eternality, that in that eternality error is unknown, that truth knows no error in that reality. The Spirit of God that moves upon error knows not error, never touches error, does not know that such a thing exists. It says, I don't know what you're talking about if you talk about error or matter or evil. I've never heard anything of that. I don't know it. I only know one thing. And so she takes in the Word, the Christ, and Christianity from the level of divine science and says, I only know one thing. Namely, that the Word of God says to error, God is all in all. So there is no room for anything else. So she first states here the fact that God is all in all, and that has a Christ. And that light illumines the whole universe. And that brings about a new Christianity. Namely, that the whole universe then is peopled only with God's ideas and nothing else. At that point, we may not know what this universe is that is peopled with God's ideas. So she goes further, and the Bible goes further, and says, all right, I can translate divine science to the level of absolute Christian science. Namely, where God constantly says, within that divine science, constantly says, bringing out absolute Christian science, I am life, truth, and love. The word in absolute Christian science is the impulsion of life that is always bringing out the facts of being at the point of absolute perfection. And so from that point on we have that terrific impulsion where we hear, if we listen to God, where God constantly says at the point of life, let there be. And truth says, and I do it. And love says, and what I do is perfect, is good. Yes? What is life, truth, and love doing? So life, truth, and love says, what I do is to bring all 7 days of creation into being. Therefore, we have the 7 days where we begin to see that life, truth, and love is constantly impelling mind to manifest itself as ideas. As ideas, as good ideas, as ideas that have a perfect record. Life, truth, and love say, I manifest myself constantly as spirit, bringing forth the reality of being. What is the reality? Consists of ideas. These alone are real, and illusions are not real, and that gives us heaven. So, life, truth, and love say, what kind of heaven is this? Is this a wobbling heaven that comes and goes? So life, truth, and say, no. I impel soul to be unchangeable, to give the unchangeable identity of being, so that everything has identity that never changes. So at that point, soul says, yes. Soul creates ideas, And these alone are identities, and these identities are clothed and fed with spiritual qualities, and they reproduce themselves, and these identities can be classified properly, and when they are classified properly and brought back to principle, they are eternal life. And life, truth, and love says, I impel principle to govern. How? I impel principle to govern through ideas. And these ideas reflect themselves in your understanding. Therefore, through that understanding, you begin to rule. The greater rules the lesser. And by ruling, you must see that you interpret everything through principle, not through anything else. And this brings you forward and ushers you into constantly new periods of progress. Wonderful. What is that progress? Life, truth, and love say, I impel the individuality of life, I impel the multiplication of life, I impel the spontaneity of life, I'm that one that does it. So I'm going to exalt you to the point of ideas, out of the earthbound consciousness into the open firmament of heaven. And there in the open firmament of heaven you can claim all divine qualities. You can be a little fish or you can be a whale. But if you want to be a whale, you also have to do a whale of a job. And that life of soul says, and then you can multiply and multiply and multiply because you can draw from an inexhaustible source, which brings you to the point of principle where you see that you only have to do with a state of life, of being, but you can only see it if you interpret through science and not through the physical senses. And so after all, life, truth, and love impel the sixth day of creation and says, I, life, truth, and love impel the consciousness of man, of the true consciousness of man, namely the consciousness of God knowing himself. As what? As ideas. These ideas have beautiful spiritual qualities. All ideas together bring out the individual man. All individual men together are the generic term man, the generic species called man. That man at the point of life has dominion. It's the son of man. And that brings to the whole universe the brotherhood of man, the compound idea man. And if you see that the whole universe is just one brotherhood, you have the womanhood of sense where you have just one universe in your consciousness. So finally, at the point of love, you can see that life, truth, and love impel love to be perfect and to be at the point of fulfillment. And we can fathom that through putting on the Christ, the mind of Christ, which knows only the truth, and that brings us to the point of love as love, where we see that within the infinite mind there is going on but one thing, the divine, infinite, countless of idea, and you can rest in that consciousness that anything that goes on is only God and his idea, and nothing else is going on.